And now, The Mentors Radio, one of the most popular and unique shows on the air today. Here each week, remarkable CEOs and leaders, including host Tom Laurie and Dan Hesse, and their guest will mentor you, challenging your thinking about life and work. Sought after for their ethical leadership and advice, and for helping others succeed throughout their careers, now these same CEOs, the mentors, want to help you achieve your highest level of profitability, success, and personal fulfillment in life, at work, and in business. Learn more and check out the show notes at thementorsradio.com. That's thementorsradio.com. And now, here's your mentor.
Welcome, I'm Tom Laurie, and I will be your host today. Today, we are honored to have Brenda Wolfe as our guest mentor. Brenda has dedicated her life to helping children with complex medical needs to have the best life they can. She has just retired as the president and CEO of Chicago's La Rabida Children's Hospital after a dozen years at the helm and 35 years in total there. La Rabida, which dates back to the 1893 World's Columbian Exhibition, is one of the oldest children's hospitals in the Midwest. During her tenure, she pioneered the patient-centered family home, in which one physician is responsible for coordinating all the care for the patient and expanding the hospital's outreach to youth experiencing trauma and underserved communities through various clinics in the surrounding area. She received the 2023 University of Chicago's Booth School of Business Distinguished Alumni Award and was named one of Crane Chicago's most notable women in healthcare. So welcome, Brenda. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for being with you.
We have a lot to cover. So you've had a remarkable career dedicated to helping kids. Tell us a little bit, because I don't think everyone knows the story about La Rabida. What is the story about La Rabida?
Well, you gave it a good start talking about how it began as actually a leftover pavilion from the World's Fair. One of the positive, well, many positive things, but as a result, we're actually located where this World's Fair was held in 1893. So La Rabida has the distinction of actually being on Chicago's lakefront, although we are a tenant of the Chicago Park District, but that makes it unique in terms of the beautiful, beautiful environment that surrounds the hospital. But when La Rabida began, the purpose of it was, in those days, there were no sewer systems, their infectious diseases really didn't have many ways to treat them. So La Rabida was really a place to bring kids from primarily Chicago's inner city to get to the lakefront, the cool breezes, to teach their moms better hygiene, how to keep milk and other things cooled. And so that's how La Rabida got its start. The building ultimately that La Rabida began in was not for long-term use. And in the 1930s, a more permanent structure was built in the park. By that time, La Rabida had a different focus, which was the care of kids with rheumatic fever, rheumatic heart disease. And La Rabida was known for that nationally, internationally, as really being at the cutting edge of care. And fortunately, that is a condition that has virtually disappeared. And in the 60s, La Rabida became more focused not on a particular condition, but a model of care, which is caring for kids with lifelong medical conditions, disabilities, and kids who've experienced trauma. And it's really viewed as a complement to the major medical centers, which there are many of in the Chicago area, where the focus is the child and his or her family, and not only the best of medical care, but the other types of supportive services that are really needed for the best outcomes, particularly because the vast majority of the kids who are served by La Rabida come from low-income communities. So the families are dealing not only with having a child with special health care needs, but just dealing with life in general. I can keep on going because I could talk about this.
Well, I got a couple. So number one, I think it's important for the audience to know that I have a special relationship with La Rabida. My grandfather, Richard J. Finnegan, who is the editor of the Chicago Sun-Times, was also board president for La Rabida from 1944 to his death in 1955. And Brenda has told me in the office she sat in as CEO, there's a cartoon on the wall that was drawn right after he passed away, showing my grandfather in memory of the care he gave to children. So she's very familiar. And we connected through the University of Chicago, where she received the Distinguished Alumni Award. But I have many memories of going to La Rabida as a kid for various ceremonies and things. So I have a very close relationship. Now, one thing I learned as I was going back and doing my homework, I didn't realize it, but the building, the original building, was a replica of La Rabida Monastery. And the importance of La Rabida Monastery, it's historical, isn't it?
It is, although there's more controversy associated with the story because of the view of Columbus. But the story goes that this monastery in Palos, Spain, played some role in the Columbus story. And the different things that we have heard or read about is that it's where he went to pray before he set sail. We've heard that it's where he kept his son for safekeeping. Not sure where Mrs. Columbus was, but probably the most probably true is it's where the deal was brokered with Queen Isabella to get the funds for the voyage. So when the Columbian Exposition took place in 1893, when Columbus got to the Americas, this was one of the World's Fair buildings, a replica of that actual monastery.
So for all of those folks out there that are involved in venture capital, this is a very early venture capital endeavor where Columbus came up with the venture and then he went looking for financing. So that's how Queen Isabella played a role. She was the financier. How many patients does La Rabida treat annually?
La Rabida serves about 9,000 kids annually, which is small relative to other children's hospitals. And most of those children are not actually children who are inpatients in the hospital. Most of them are kids who come for ongoing medical care and other kinds of support. So it's a little different kind of a model than you find in most children's hospital, because the inpatient unit at La Rabida is very small, 39 beds, but very relevant services for kids who are transferred from the neonatal and pediatric intensive care units throughout the area for step-down services, for developmental services, for teaching their families how to take care of them at home, for arranging for the support in the home. And so it's a very, very needed service, but it's very unique relative to most children's hospitals.
We're going to come back and talk some more about La Rabida and also Brenda's journey. So let's hold that thought. This is Tom Laurie, and you're listening to the Mentors Radio Show.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. Today, we are with Brenda Wolf, the retired president and CEO of Chicago's La Rabida Children's Hospital, who just retired after 13 years being CEO and president. And she's been recognized as one of the most notable women in healthcare. So we were talking about La Rabida, the number of patients, and the care is changed significant, not only with the outpatient care, but talk about some of the conditions that you're treating, because you're a specialty hospital, but you've got quite a bit of breadth in terms of the conditions that you're treating, including mental health.
Let's see, how can I start off? Let's talk about mental health, which is a really, every child that comes to La Rabida is offered mental health services, specifically dealing with their chronic condition that also bleeds into serving their families as well. As an example, a child with diabetes, how to work on getting them to realize what that means in terms of their growth and development, what that means like being a high school student, and how that might affect their, not just their physical development, but their mental health development. But La Rabida also over the years developed this particular niche, which is dealing with kids that have experienced trauma. A lot of these children are in the custody of Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, where they have been unfortunately victims of abuse and neglect, but also other kinds of kids who just experienced traumatic experience, either personally or being a witness to them. And so there are intensive therapy services offered to these children to help them to deal with the impact that they have experienced. We do those services are offered at Larabita and also to outposts of Larabita, because there's really no need for those children to actually come to a hospital.
So when you talk about outposts, these are satellite centers. Are they owned by other people and you have partnerships or?
They're rented spaces. The one, we have one in right not too far from Larabita in Hyde Park. It's just rented office space. But there are other providers in that space as well. The other one is in Park Forest, Illinois, which is in the south suburbs of Chicago. And what's interesting about that space, it's actually in the Park Forest Safety Center. It's where the police and fire department are headquartered, which is an interesting kind of model to have some of the folks that sometimes see these kids before Larabita does to be able to work that closely and collaborate with them.
I know you're dealing with a lot of low-income people and people that are taken care of by the state, so that gets into funding. You must have had tremendous challenges on funding.
Funding is, for Larabita, has always been a challenge because, so 90% of the children that Larabita cares for are insured or covered by the Illinois Medicaid program. Larabita has the distinction of being the most Medicaid-reliant hospital in the state of Illinois and probably in the top 10 in the country. Of course, my mantra always was, if you're going to be high in Medicaid, you might as well be number one because you have a really, really good case to make to the decision makers. And because of Larabita's unique services, a lot of times Larabita has to make sure that those decision makers understand that sometimes a decision about paying more for surgery or the emergency room isn't necessarily going to have a positive impact on the kinds of kids that are cared for at Larabita. So a lot of work goes into education of elected officials, both legislative, administrative, the departments in the state that deal with funding. And it really has to be a good working relationship, a partnership to get them to understand what the hospital does so that when funding decisions are made, that the hospital is not forgotten.
So you must have spent a lot of time in Springfield.
Yes, and also we've had folks who represent us there, but yes, Springfield, seeing the elected officials when they're home. Medicaid is a program that is, it's a federal state program, so it's also making sure that elected officials at the federal level also understand who we are and what we do. But yes, we invest a lot of time and resources to make sure those folks are our friends, but also that, and I truly mean this, they're partners. We're not just asking for money. We're demonstrating that there's really positive outcomes and that it makes a tremendous difference in the lives of these kids and their families.
Ms. Tom Lurie, we're with healthcare CEO Brenda Wolf, who received the 2023 Distinguished Alumni Award from the University of Chicago's Booth School of Management. Well, I just this morning actually worked on a problem I've got for my wife and Social Security. I cannot imagine what you had to do with regards to dealing with Medicaid. So did you ever get, I'm curious because you're the CEO and you're running an organization, ever get to the point where you didn't have money or you had to scramble? And I mean,
well, there were times over the years where the outlook of our funding did not look positive, and we needed to really look deep into are there ways to do things different or better or change our model? And fortunately, knock on wood, not for a long time, having to maybe reduce the workforce. But I have to say that Larabita has been fortunate over the last number of years to be able to figure out ways to manage resources well, but also to make sure that we have adequate funding. But yeah, it makes you nervous. It makes you nervous when the legislature's in session and they're going to be making that final decision. Part of it is that there's not enough revenue to just pay for the services delivered, because a lot of the things Larabita does you can't bill for, like social work support of a family or nutrition, which is always one that gets me, is Medicaid. If a nutritionist meets with a family or helps to come up with the diet that a child who is tube fed needs, you can't bill for that. So we've always had to make the case that in order to be successful, we need to get other additional funding for the things that we can't bill for. And that's also where the private sector and foundations comes in. But it is a daunting task, but that's part, it's easy to tell the story and to try to make the case anyway.
Right. And how much time did you spend on that part of the activity?
I don't know if I want to think about it. A lot in that it was, communication, it was visits, it was making sure we also had the data to show that what we were doing made a difference, which is sometimes hard for people in the not-for-profit world to think about. I think, they want people just to feel that they do great work and therefore there should be money. But unfortunately, that's not the real world.
You went on and got a MBA at the Chicago, University of Chicago. How has that helped you in your job?
I did that before I started at Larabita, but I had been working in other not-for-profit settings, working with kids with special healthcare needs. And I think that it was essential. It gave me better credentials because it was clear that I was sort of in a management path. But it also obviously taught me about things that I never really gave much thought, like how to do a budget or how to make sure you have your assets invested well. And the other thing, it really opened my eyes to what marketing is. And marketing isn't just, brochures and billboards. It's really looking at all your constituencies. Your employees, your donors, the government, patients and families, and saying, okay, here's my audience. What do I want to communicate to them and how best to do that? And that really, I don't know if I would have gotten to that had I not gotten the MBA. So it just really opened my eyes and really helped me in thinking about how to be successful.
Well, we're going to come back and talk more about your journey. We're with Larabita's Brenda Wolf, and we'll be back in a moment. You can listen to this show and past shows on all popular podcast platforms by going to our website, thementorsradio.com. Subscribe while you're there so you don't miss any future shows. That's thementorsradio.com. This is Tom Laurie, and this is The Mentors Radio.
And now, back to The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. Today we are with Brenda Wolf, recognized as one of the most notable women in healthcare. So we were talking about your MBA, and I will say that my own experience is that the finance and accounting part of the work that I did at Booth paid off handsomely in my career. It wasn't where I was going to start, but that I took all the courses, and that really has been it was a boon to my career. So that was my experience. I got promoted halfway through the program. Then I got one marketing course, and that was it. And I had to move on. But anyway,
I was just going to say one quick thing. My dad was had his own business, and I used to help him in his office, and many of the things I did for him, I didn't realize what I was doing, like credits and debits and all that kind of stuff. I just did it. And it was only when I started to take, accounting courses that I realized why I was doing the things I was doing. I always thought that was pretty fascinating.
And I would agree, same thing. So there was one time a medical type affiliation with the University of Chicago Medical Center. Does that still exist?
It does. It's not quite as permanent or direct as it was many moons ago, where The bylaws of La Rabida required that the CEO be a physician from the University of Chicago and that all the medical staff had to be University of Chicago physicians, just for the purpose of being practical in terms of referrals, as well as making sure that La Rabida had all the resources it needed. La Rabida, the relationship is still very, very strong. Many of the physicians that work at La Rabida are actually faculty of the University of Chicago, but it is not an exclusive relationship. University of Chicago is still the most major referrer. And the other thing that La Rabida has done over the years is not only look just at the faculty part of it, but because La Rabida is so small, it doesn't make sense for La Rabida to necessarily do some of the services independently. So for example, all of La Rabida's purchasing is actually through the University of Chicago Medicine, which was a great help to La Rabida as they're much more adept in negotiating contracts with vendors. And also a number of years ago, La Rabida had its own lab that did all the lab work. And sometimes they do one lab test five times in a year, but have to calibrate the machines every week. So a number of years ago, La Rabida also had the University of Chicago become essentially its lab vendor. La Rabida still does what's called point of service labs, but the University of Chicago labs does the majority of the lab work. So it is a great collaborative relationship. But it's not quite the same as when your grandfather was there. Matter of fact, there's a building named after your grandfather, the Finnegan Building, which at one time was 100% of research labs for the University of Chicago.
Yes, I remember. That's what I remember, the groundbreaking, actually. How did you find your way into the nonprofit world and then La Rabida as a CEO?
Well, I was a do-gooder, I guess. Part of it is sort of where I was in the world as a female, I guess. I had a bachelor's degree in psychology, actually from the University of Illinois. So put out a cheer, made it to the Sweet 16, and then went on and got a master's degree in special education. And I was working directly with kids. As I said, I got more and more management responsibilities, and I think I felt like I was doing well in that. So it just sort of happened when I just then decided to stop what I was doing, move back to Chicago, go to the University of Chicago, get my MBA. And when it was all done, I looked at another number of job opportunities, and this position at La Rabida became available. It was their first marketing director. And as much as it didn't exactly pay back my investment into the MBA, it was like meant for me because I knew the population. I had just acquired all this additional marketing understanding and learning. And so I became their first marketing director. And actually, at the time, I did not want to be in management. I did not want to worry about staffing. I did not want to worry about the day-to-day. But I soon learned that to do marketing, you have to be able to fulfill the promise. And the more I got involved, I saw that I needed to help sort of maybe have an impact on operations. And so gradually, I got more and more involved into the day-to-day. So it just sort of all fell into place. I grew up just a few miles from where La Rabida is, which is just sort of remarkable to think that I would return to my old neighborhood. It's just sort of all happened. And because I was able to grow within the organization, I didn't have to seek other opportunities elsewhere.
This is Tom Laurie. We're with healthcare CEO Brenda Wolf, who received the 2023 Distinguished Alumni Award from the University of Chicago Booth School of Management. So on your journey, who was it that affirmed you?
That's a really good question. Well, this may sound weird. I think I affirm myself, which I think is important. I mentioned my dad, although he wasn't alive by the time he was alive for the, yes, that's not true. He was alive while I was in school. He passed away soon thereafter. He had two daughters. And so I think his two daughters, he drove them, not in a negative way, to grow and develop. And education was always important, but also giving back was also equally important because he worked real hard for what he was able to achieve. He was as a teenager escaped a Nazi Germany. And so giving back was always there. And I think he was proud of both myself and my sister for working real hard and succeeding. My sister's an attorney, and my getting the MBA. And then along the way, I think it was obviously my colleagues at La Rabida and also the relationships I developed, sort of in the outside world, some of the government officials, and also our board. And our board was always extremely supportive, and there were members of the board who were there to really support me and to understand what we were trying to accomplish and to support that as well.
Did you have any really important mentor? I mean, you're coming into this healthcare thing. Was there a certain mentor?
You know, I have to say, I did not have a person. I really had various individuals I went to for various things. The prior CEO was a female physician, and she was always very, very supportive and a friend. But I have to say, and you know, whether that was because I didn't look hard enough or whether it just didn't fall into place, I never had that one person. I throw in a good word about my husband, who, although we did not have, he was a Booth graduate, but a number of years prior. But he always was so focused. He's always been focused on networking and relationships. And so he was also, I don't know if he was a mentor, but he was always a great model for me to emulate in that way as well.
Oh, that's great about the networking. We're going to be right back with La Rabida's Brenda Wolf in a moment. If you enjoyed this show and you're listening to us on your favorite podcast platform, make sure you scroll down and give us a 5-star rating. This is Tom Laurie, and you're listening to the Mentors Radio Show.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Laurie. Today we are with Brenda Wolf, recognized as one of the most notable women in healthcare. If you're listening to this show or on your favorite podcast platform, again, scroll down and give us a 5-star rating. So what would you say were the greatest moments of frustration in your role as CEO?
That's, you know, we talked before this, so I started to think about that. So I'll call them challenges rather than frustration. I mean, obviously, La Rabida being the small organization that it is, it's always been difficult to figure out, you know, usually the biggest donors in healthcare are individuals, usually grateful patients, and La Rabida had many grateful patients, but they did not have the resources. So it was looking at how to develop other kinds of relationships to be able to, to get additional funding. I'd call that one of the challenges, and I wouldn't call it a frustration, but I'd have to say that the COVID era was probably one of the biggest frustrations that I've ever experienced. And not that La Rabida became a place where people with COVID came to for care, although some of our kids did have COVID. It was just how to adapt the environment to deal with COVID. And that would include how to keep our patients, our inpatients safe, how to allow their families to continue to be there with them, but to make sure that they didn't bring COVID into the hospital, how to protect and keep our employees safe, how to work with our outpatients. And we tried to minimize them coming into the hospital, but what did that mean? How to continue to get supplies where suddenly there was a shortage of everything. And our person who is the head of supply chain literally did meet people in their cars, in their trunks to get certain items that, you know, we could not just get through regular channels. And it just changed, you know, and this notion of working from home, which is really hard to do when you are a healthcare provider, and how you balance that with taking care of patients. We literally, within a few days' time, brought telehealth into the operations of the hospital. I call that one of the triumphs, that if we had done this because we thought maybe it was a good thing to do, we would have had like five committees and interviewed all these vendors, and nobody would have agreed on which product to purchase. But because we had to do it, we did it really quickly. And then it was figuring out how to offer telehealth to our kids and families. And so all of that put together was just a huge, huge drain on the organization. And some of the issues still haven't gone away, partly because the culture of being able to work from home has become so ingrained in what people want to do. Yet, how do you do that and deliver care for patients? And I think the shortage of certain personnel in certain areas, nurses, respiratory therapists, that was all on the horizon, but it was exacerbated through COVID. And there are so many work opportunities for people in those fields that they don't necessarily have to come to a hospital to work, makes that challenge still out there. And it's very, very difficult. And obviously, when there's a shortage of employees, you're dealing with major medical centers who have more resources to be able to, give raises, give bonuses and things like that. And that was also and still is a challenge.
What did you do to take care of yourself emotionally and intellectually as you went through that pandemic?
That's a really good question. Probably I just chose to, move forward and not worry about that. Obviously, I worked with and still have a lot of folks that were the leaders of the hospital, that their contribution, their support was very helpful. I guess I've never been one of these people that's, I have yoga or have this or that. So probably I wasn't that good at that. That's not why I retired. I was just, that was a plan regardless of COVID. So it didn't do me in that way. Also, the people, the Illinois Hospital Association, as an example, did so many things to connect to elected officials to try to get the right resources and to set up meetings, virtual meetings with people. And that was just really rewarding. And I'll tell you a really quick story. So the federal government wanted to provide additional dollars to hospitals. So the easiest way for them to do that was to take hospitals' Medicare, which is a completely federal program just for seniors, and use their the revenue or the dollars or the volumes and use that as a way to provide dollars to hospitals. Well, because Larbi is a children's hospital, in that first round of funding, we received like $19. Just a ridiculous thing. But just right after that, the Hospital Association had arranged for a call with Senator Durbin, which is one of Illinois state senators. And I had the opportunity to tell Senator Durbin about this huge funding that we received. He and his staff went to work with the, and it wasn't just for Larbi, to any children's hospital would have been impacted in this way. He and his staff went to work to have the Department of Health and Human Services, the CMS who funds Medicaid, come up with another model for children's providers. So to me, that was like a great victory and just feeling like, when you can tell your story and make your case and you have friends, that they will be there to help you. So that was just one of the happy, rewarding things for COVID and just really the resilience of staff. I mean, our rehab staff, they figured out through, because now some of these kids were getting their therapy at home through Amazon and other programs. We, through funds we had, sent therapy balls and crayons and coloring books to the kids at home so that they could have them when their therapists worked with them and their parents from afar. So it was also just seeing the resilience and the innovation of staff that was solace to me.
How do you think working in pediatric healthcare changed you?
Well, You know, I've always sort of been in the kids area, and I have to say, in a way, it's maybe more rewarding than working with adults, because, you know, one of the things, our purpose, my purpose, is to make sure kids get everything they need. And so it's really coming up with the ways best to do that. Sometimes that is a little challenging, in the sense that if you're, if you know, in adult hospitals, if you're late for your appointment, it's really easy to say to the adult, well, you're irresponsible, you'll have to make another appointment. But how can you do that for kids if their parents are late? And often the reasons for them being late isn't because they were being irresponsible, it was just how life impacts them. But well,
hold that thought. We're gonna cut the break. We're gonna come right back with Laura Beatles.
Going so fast.
We'll be back in a moment. This is Tom Lohr, and this is the Mentors Radio Show.
And now, back to the Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business.
Welcome back. This is Tom Lohr. I am with Chicago's La Rabita Children's Hospital, just retired president and CEO, Brenda Wolf. So we were talking about how working in pediatric care changed you, and you were saying it was very rewarding, and you liked, I think, to quote you, better than working with adults. So let's switch a little bit. How did being a CEO change you?
Well, I think in two ways. I think that being a CEO, you have a much bigger burden on your shoulders in terms of, you know, you kind of own the place. But at the same token, it also gives you sort of a sense to look at what you think is best, not to be a tyrant or anything, but to try to look at what you think the world should look like or your organization should look like, and then how to make that happen. So, it was just a wonderful way to end a career. I think that instead of thinking of being the CEO and running things, it's really the relationships that I developed in that time that maybe I wouldn't have been able to have if I wasn't the CEO. It is interesting how people are much more responsive to you if you're the CEO as opposed to a vice president or a director. But I also got involved in sort of external organizations that were rewarding to me, but also helped develop opportunities for La Rabita. Two of them that I can just think of offhand is the Economic Club of Chicago, and the other one is called the Chicago Network, which is a women's leader organization, which I would have never been invited to be a member of had I not been the CEO. And so I've made great friends. I've also, for example, the Chicago Network have helped other women in healthcare be able to become members. But I've also met people who then ultimately became board members of La Rabita. So there's just, it all sort of comes together, developing relationships, networking, making your case, but also caring about other people and making sure that they have an opportunity to join organizations like that.
So that's back to your husband and networking.
Yep.
So Jim Collins, yeah, I don't know if you're familiar with Jim Collins, but he wrote the book Good to Great. Yep. He also wrote a smaller book, which took a lot out of the bigger book, called Good to Great in the Social Sector. Do you ever see that one?
No, I've only seen the first one.
Okay, the one in the social sectors, I think, is one of the really all-time great books. I would love to get Collins on to talk about that, because what you talk about are these relationships. And rather than running a company, you're running this organization, and it could be like a smaller company, not just nonprofit, but you're having to reach out, and you've got these relationships with government officials. You've got all these stakeholders that you have to bring together. And I think you highlight exactly what Collins wrote about in terms of being successful in the social sector.
Yeah, no, it is like when I accepted the award at Booth, one of the things I talked about was, you know, I was supposed to talk about how Booth impacted me. And I really went through a whole thing about marketing. I mean, marketing is everything. Even with the workforce issues, you know, people in human resources may think just putting an ad in a paper or you know, one of the online things is enough. But even that, the quote, you know, I hate to use the term talent acquisition, but that's all marketing too. So really, this idea of relationships and marketing, and for everyone to look at the other person, individual, organization, and it's not what I need from you, but what I can give to you to fulfill what you need. And that really just has helped me tremendously. And it really is all about networking and marketing.
And you were at the helm quite a number of years. I think the average tenure of a CEO is 5 years, but you're well beyond that. What, and we only have about 30 seconds left, but what do you think is the legacy that you left at La Rabida?
Is a financially healthy organization that has a mission to take care of some of Chicago's most vulnerable kids and families, and is able to do that and really improve the quality of their life beyond just great medical care.
And what are your plans for the future?
Well, my plans for the future is some people leave and retire and have a whole lot planned. I've just been dabbling. So I go to events, I meet with people. I used to do some acrylic painting. I started to paint again, but I'm just really dabbling to figure out what is the next step.
Well, you'd make a great board member for somebody. I think I mentioned that to you before. So maybe we'll get people focused on that. So our time is up. I want to thank you, Brenda, for your time today. We've been with the just retired president and CEO of Chicago's La Rabida Children's Hospital. La Rabida, which dates back to the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition, is one of the oldest children's hospitals in the Midwest. Join us next week at the same time for the next edition of the Mentors Radio. Until then, this is Tom Lorre signing off for today. Remember to be all that you can be and keep the candle lit for all who struggle in the darkness.
It's been The Mentors, where remarkable CEOs challenge your thinking about life and business. To get more information about the program or a sponsor, to download a podcast of today's show, or to leave a question for our host, go to thementorsradio.com. That's www.thementorsradio.com. The preceding program, copyright CBJ LLC. All rights reserved.